The Holy Gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ, according to Mark. James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came forward to him and said to him, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you." And he said to them, "What is it that you want me to do for you?" And they said to him, "Grant us to sit, one at your right hand and one at your left, in your glory." But Jesus said to them, "You do not know what you are asking. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink, or be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with?" They replied, "We are able." Then Jesus said to them, "The cup that I drink, you will drink, and with the baptism with which I am baptized, you will be baptized. But to sit at my right hand or at my left is not mine to grant, but it is for those for whom it has been prepared." When the 10 heard this, they began to be angry with James and John. So Jesus called them and said to them, "You know that among the Gentiles, those for whom they recognized as their rulers lord it over them, and their great ones are tyrants over them. But it is not so among you, but whoever wishes to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wishes to be first among you must be slave of all. For the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life for a ransom of many." The Gospel of our Lord.
Well, as I've mentioned to you many times in the past, I really love the Bible. You'll find that you can't love a law book. So if you look at the Bible as some kind of law book, you're never really going to get that relationship with it. But when you look at it as a library of people who are struggling to discern God in their time, in their place, you begin to... It's almost as if you know the people that wrote it after a while. And it's such a gift. They're such delights. This year in the lectionary, we're reading the Gospel according to Mark. And that author of that book, boy, I love him. He has authority issues. I like that. And in this, you can see it. In this one, you heard Betty just read to you that story. Luke doesn't include that story at all. Matthew and Luke probably had copies of Mark when they were writing. And so when there's changes, they're there for a reason. Luke just skipped it all together and listened to Matthew's version. See how well you were listening to Betty. Then the mother of the sons of Zebedee came up to Jesus with her sons, bowed down before him and asked him for a favor. He said to her, "What do you want?" She said to him, "Give me your word that these two sons of mine may sit, one at your right hand and one in your left, in your dominion." See the difference? That's part of the fun of reading the Bible. There are other books that are really so profound that rather than argue with them or even find amusement in them, sometimes you just sit in awe and wonder as you read. And that's what we've been having in our Old Testament readings. Right now, in the lectionary, you've been going through Job. I don't know if Jeff's done it every week or not, but this is the third week, and there's one more week. It started out with this little contest between God and Satan. And Job is the poor, unwitting recipient of that. And then last week, you got to hear Job's complaint when things had finally built up so much. And this week was God's response. And then next week is sort of the denouement, what comes afterwards. But this is really the climax week. But I want you to, don't want you to forget, or if you weren't here, I don't want you to miss what was last week. Let me turn this off so we don't get anybody squealing. Okay. So this is from last week when Job is voicing his complaint to God. Job said, Today also, because this has been going on, my complaint is bitter. My hand is heavy despite my groaning. Oh, that I knew where I might find him, that I might come even to his dwelling. I would lay my case before him and fill my mouth with arguments. I would learn what he would answer me and understand what he would say to me. Would he contend with me in the greatness of his power? No, but he would give heed to me. There forever, there an upright person could reason with him, and I should be acquitted forever by my judge. If I go forward, he is not there, or backward, I cannot perceive him. On the left, he hides, and I cannot behold him. I turn to the right, but I cannot see him. God has made my heart faint. The Almighty has terrified me. If only I could vanish in darkness, and thick darkness would cover my face. It's heartbreaking. I think we can all empathize with that. You know, when he says, if I could just lay out my case to God, God would understand it from my point of view. These problems would go away. And then today is God's answer. The Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind. Who is this that darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Gird up your loins like a man. I will question you, and you shall declare to me. Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. Who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Or who stretched the line upon it? On what were its bases sunk? Or who laid its cornerstone when the morning stars sang together and all the heavenly beings shouted for joy? Basically, that's talking to us about God having a bigger purpose, a bigger picture that works itself out in time. Now, I remember, since I'm quizzing you all today, see if you remember this sermon I did. I talked a while back about how the religion and science aren't opposed. They tie closely together. And that when the science talks about us living in a space and time continuum, that in religion we talk about the same thing, except that we use different words. The Hebrew word for salvation literally means make space. And we use the word redemption for time. So sometimes these struggles that we have that come into our continuum, the only way that we ever understand them, if we even do it all, is with time. That's where the meaning can enter in. Let me give you an example. Years ago, I made friends with a wonderful woman, young, we were both young back then, who she, as a teenager, was a beautiful girl and was in a car wreck. And the car caught fire, and she got badly scarred in her face. As I got to know her, I still saw her as beautiful. And you know how young people, when you're young, you sit up late and you think about the meaning of life and stuff. We were having one of those conversations, staying up late at night talking. And she said, you know, if a fairy godmother would appear in front of me and say, I can fix your face. I would be so excited, I'd jump at that chance in a heartbeat. But if she added, but the cost is that you have to give up everything you've learned from having those scars. I've thought long and hard about that, Eric. And the answer is no. I wouldn't do it. Wow. Wow. And yet I understood. There's sometimes the things in our lives that happen. When they happen, we feel so lost, abandoned, not seen by God. And yet, over time, over redemption, their meaning can come out to us. Sometimes the meaning that can become so important, it becomes part of us, a part we wouldn't give up. That's the wonder of our God. And that's what Job is teaching us, that there's a bigger picture than just ours. There's a larger, God has a larger vision and concern. And we need to make room, salvation, for that by giving it time, redemption. Well, that's what I wanted to say about Job, but we're on that. Jeff asked me today to speak. Apparently you've been having talks every Sunday about stewardship. And Jeff, he doesn't really know me as well as he thinks he does. Because any treasurer in Northern Nevada will say, don't let Eric talk about stewardship. Because I do have my own ideas about it. About what we do with our money. Sometimes, you know, it's just too, to me, it's too neat and clean to say, I'm going to give this percentage to God, and I'm going to give it to God by giving it to the church, and I'm going to sign a check and put it in the plate. And there I've done my stewardship. Well, number one, as Job teaches us, everything that we have is really God's. She's just lent it to us. And in that sense, we need to be willing, when a need arises, to give it. And the second part is, yeah, it's really important that a part of that money goes to your church community. Because this is the place where people understand where we sacrifice, why we sacrifice to help other people. Why we care about the rest of the world. Why we make the decisions we do. We need this community because the rest of the world probably doesn't understand us basing our decisions on love instead of self-interest. However, we're missing a part of the gift if we do that too cleanly. What I want you to encourage you to do is take part of that money that's your pledge that you're intentionally giving to God and not give it in a clean way by writing a check to the church, but give it personally to somebody who needs it. Keep your eyes open for someone who's hurting or needs help and be willing to give it. You won't get your tax deduction. Oh well. But what you'll get is you'll be opening yourself up to that person and their struggle. Yeah, Job learned about who God was because he went through that struggle himself. But you know, I bet his wife learned as well, because this person she loved was going through these struggles, this person that she cared about. When we open ourselves up to the struggles of those around us and make ourselves vulnerable, you know, afterwards you think, oh God, he's probably going to use that money to buy booze. I made it worse. Well, maybe you did, maybe you didn't, but you tried. You opened your heart up to somebody who was in need. That's what I mean by giving money. It's important to give money to your church, but it's also important to do it yourself, to give money to the people, to and time and your heart, to people around you who are hurting. That's all part of your stewardship. And when we do that, then it all becomes part of our learning as well, just as it was part of Job's learning. It all becomes, we open ourselves up to where it's easiest to see God moving, and that's with the hurting around us, the people who are hurting. Is God moving with people who are celebrating their birthday and just won the lottery and are having a great time? Yeah, but it's harder to see it there because they don't need God that much, they think. But in those times of real need, God's right there on the surface. And you and I can learn from that by opening ourselves up to those people as well. So, if Jeff asks, yes, I did do a stewardship talk. And part of it, a very important part, is having a community that understands why we make the sacrifices we do, and it won't be able to be here unless you support it. But part of it is to do it yourself so that you learn, you experience God in the world around you, because God is